All right, guys, it's time for the Next Level Guy Show, a men's interview, interest, and improvement-focused podcast featuring interviews with the greats from all industries to help you better your life. Each week, a new episode features an interview with one of the greats, covering all aspects of their story, from life hacks to tips and protocols that have allowed them to live life on the next level. We then highlight concrete action steps that you can use to improve your life. And now, your host, Ian Dawson McKay.
Today's guest is Gabriella Lester. Gabriella is a 20-year-old internationally award-winning magician. She draws inspiration from her passions in life and has built a dedicated fan base with her own brand of mind-blowing tricks, startling stage presence, and a healthy dose of sarcasm. At 14, she was the youngest performer to ever do Houdini's daring suspended straitjacket escape, where she escaped a straitjacket while being suspended in the air by her feet. She's performed on some of the biggest stages in Vegas while being a frequent headliner at the world-famous Magic Castle in Hollywood, California. Her highlight reel is mind-blowing for a performer at such a young age. Most recently, she appeared on Penn & Teller's hit show Fool Us, but she's also been featured in the New York Times and performed over 500 shows in 2023 while solo touring in Europe and North America. And in this interview, we cover her journey from awestruck audience member to magic performing rock star, how she dealt with the woes of COVID and heartbreak to become a stronger person, what it was like performing to legends like Penn and Teller at such a young age, how you can evolve your performance as you grow as a person, and how you can chase your dreams at any age, and so much more. And now, let's get to the interview. Thank you so much for coming on. I've been looking forward to this for ages. You're an absolute star. Most people know you from the Penn and Teller show, but how would you explain who is this roller coaster of, you know, mayhem that we're seeing in front of us?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I've been in magic for most of my life. So what you're seeing is an accumulation of a super passionate child who decided from an early age that she wanted to dive into a crazy world and create as big as of a wave as possible. And that's kind of what I've been doing and what I'm doing now.
So your dad was a car racer. Do you think you were always sort of predestined to go on this journey of an alternative lifestyle? Or was it just seeing magic at school that kind of just ignited that passion for you?
Yeah, I think it was a mix of things. One, being raised by parents that were passionate and having a father that was really open and deep about the things that he loved in life and wanting to pursue a passion. And he ended up going into business. And I kind of saw what that did to his life, having a passion for racing and then diverting to a career that was, I guess, more practical and stable, as lots of people do. And that's okay. And I just really didn't want that to be me. So in some ways, it was part of that. And the other part was magic was kind of this thing that I believe I was always meant to do. I had so many interactions as a child with the people I met and the way my kind of life worked out that pushed me towards pursuing it. And every time I stepped away, there was another hook that brought me back. And it's like, this is your path. This is what you should be doing. And I haven't felt that way about anything else.
So when you were originally considering this, was there any time that you had ever thought about a 9-to-5 apart from when you went during COVID, when you worked in the, you know, in the bike shop? Was there any other career path, or was this always the one for you, do you think?
You've done your research, first of all, knowing about the bike shop. But yeah, I mean, I was really passionate about a lot of things as a child. I think I decided from an early age, and I just knew as a young kid, as I was just a dreamer. I was a super big optimist. And I knew that whatever I did in life, I wanted to do as much with it as I possibly could. Like, I wanted what I chose in life to be my legacy, and I wanted to make it large. So every time I found a hobby as a kid, you know, music or art or this or that or whatever subject it was, I dove into it really deep. And so it was kind of hard to tell which of those things would be the one. And it took a couple of years to actually realize and sink in the fact that it was magic and it was this thing. But there were definitely a lot of hobbies that I still love now. You know, I wish that life, and maybe it could be done in 10-year increments. So for 10 years, you're this, and the next 10 years, you're that, because there's so many things in life that I love that I would love to pursue in the same way that I do for magic. But it's just, it's always been the one for me, and I've loved it more than anything else. And I think it's just one of those things in life that you know.
Because I think we're all searching for that, aren't we? We kind of put up with the silly jobs just to try find that thing that creates that fire in your soul. And I love how that you use your passions and your interests to actually create your act. And it's your personality, it's you as a person, not a character. Yeah. You're portraying yourself just dialed up to 11. Now, there can't be many young kids who ask for, say, handcuffs and a straitjacket and get it for Christmas. How on earth do you persuade your parents? I know they're wanting the best for you and they're encouraging you, but they must have thought, Did you ever have any sort of real pushback, or were they just saying, look, just slowly build your way into this?
Yeah, I mean, I think they had the same concerns that I do now looking back, where they just saw me love a bunch of things. So it was hard for them to stand behind something, especially such a unique and unusual profession, and go, okay, we support you, we get it. I think I owe that one to a conversation that one of my mentors had with my dad. I was going to a magic school in Vegas when I was about 13 or 14, and it was just this thing that I loved and I dived into, and my parents were like, if you love it, we're here for you. But they just didn't really know if it was it or not, and I was still super young at the time. But the teacher of the magic school, his name's Jeff McBride. He's been in magic for ever, and he's a super big name in the industry. And he's had this magic school for nearly 30 years. So he's seen a lot of people come through. And after spending time with me, I guess, that week, he asked if he could call my dad in. And I didn't know at the time that this conversation had happened, but he brought my dad in and he sat him down and he said, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've seen very few people that are like her. Just trust me, support her. If you stand behind her and you just trust her, with, she'll make it. And I think because he heard it from someone that wasn't me for the first time, and it was somebody that he respected and trusted, and he knew that in the world of magic, he was somebody that was respected. From that moment on, both of my parents have stood behind every decision I've made. And it's been crazy, and it's probably not easy. I can imagine they're terrified. I think I would be, you know, as a parent, but they trust it, and they know who I am, and they know how much I want this, and they see me work at it every day. So all they can do is, you know, sit in the audience with me and watch it happen.
I love the faith they have. You know, it's that kind of, okay, what do you need now? You know, you're going to hang yourself upside down on national TV, right? You know, but I know what you mean. It's that moment of, you sometimes need that mentor outside to say, look, there is something there. It's hard to see the wood for the trees when it's your own kid and you're trying to protect them. But I love that you and your dad have that level of connection. You both have that passion for race car driving, etc. But how did you find that? Because you talked about leaving school, I think it was at 16.
Yeah.
How on earth did you say no? No college, uni, the gap year, all the traditional stuff. How on earth did you have that faith, that belief in yourself at such an early age? Because I know you've seen, was it Sean Farquhar when you were younger? And he pulled the marker out his nose. And how on earth do you go from that to I want to do that? How did you build that belief in yourself?
I think when I found the world of magic and really got into it, it just felt like coming home. Every time I spoke about it, every time I was around other performers, every time there were days in my life where it was just about magic, it just felt like I was at home, and I really liked that. And it was a natural progression. I mean, I fell in love with it as a kid, as most kids do. And then I just ended up fortunately having teachers and mentors that pushed me and helped me and answered my questions. But it was like this addiction and this passion I fell in love with as a kid, and I ran with it, and I started performing for friends. And then I started performing in the theater at school, and then I started performing in the hallways, and then I started volunteering at shows. And then it was just this natural progression. And every step of it just felt so right for me. You know, building a show, getting on stage by myself, all of these steps just felt like it was exactly where I was meant to be at the time. And I think that helped. And all I wanted to do was get out there and do it. So I was so driven to get out of school, because I knew what I wanted to do already. And I felt like I was surrounded by all these people that were deciding. And all my friends were, okay, we want to go to college. What do we want to do? You know, are we going to go to college and figure out later? And they were just trying to figure out what they wanted in life. And I was sitting there, you know, as a 13-year-old kid being like, I know what I want, and I want this, and I want it now. So I worked, you know, as hard as I could to get out of school. And my parents just said, we believe you, we support you. we know you're going to get it just as much as you think you will. Just finish high school. That's all we say. Finish school, get your diploma, make that happen, you know. And then whether you go to college or not is up to you. And I was actually planning to originally. I was going to go to school in Vegas. I was going to finish high school, go to school in Vegas. And then as soon as I graduated, or while I was graduating, COVID happened. So I couldn't travel and people, you know, obviously the whole pandemic happened. So I started working at the bike dealership because it was an essential service and it stayed open. And it, that took up my life for a few years. And, you know, I think I almost lost magic in that because it was comfortable and practical. And when you don't love something that much, you don't care. I mean, I loved it. It was a great job. I really enjoyed it, but it wasn't my whole world. Magic is my whole world. I care so much about every show I do. I care so much about every decision I make and every piece, puzzle piece in this giant masterpiece I'm trying to create. But with that, it was like, oh, I'm passionate about this. I like it. It's stable pay. There's nothing crazy about it. You know, I don't have great days and awful days and good shows and bad shows. I just go in and do this thing that I like and I'm done with it. So it was, I almost didn't make it back to magic through that. But again, it gets me when I walk away.
It's something weird. It's like we've all got that passion, that creative hobby that we all want to do. And I love that you actually listened to that voice and kept going, because I mean, I'm 41 and I still have no idea what I want to do. I'm doing a job in an office, and it's only recently I started the podcast, and I just enjoy speaking to people and being curious and, you know, seeking out information about them and finding out. And I think a lot of people go to their deathbed and think, I wish I'd done this. I wish I'd lived a life that was truer to who I am as a person. And yeah. I love that you're inspiring young people with the same sense of wonder and awe that you had when you were younger. But you said during that COVID time that was the first time that 9 to 5 was becoming nice and enjoyable. How did you break out that sense of comfort zone, that fear, to go after that passion? Was the drive to get back to magic strong enough, or did you struggle to make the initial step?
I did, and I owe that a lot to the people around me that kept trying to, you know, invite me to shows or do things or come back into the community and tiptoe in it, because I think the people around me that knew me knew once I started talking about it or I remembered what it was like, I'd fall in love with it within a second again, you know, like the first time, and never leave it. But it was hard for me because I loved my job and I was good at my job and it couldn't break me. You know, I could have a bad day at work and it was nothing. Whereas if I make a bad career decision, it crushes the part of my soul because I love it so much. Yep. But it really was the people around me that kept trying to push me and inspire me back. And I remember someone I worked with, his name's Casey, and we were talking one day and Casey goes, "You're great at this, but you don't belong here. You know, you're more than this. You're great at your job and you could have a great job here forever, but you are so much more than the girl that you are standing behind this computer doing this job." And those words hit all the right parts of the inside of my body and the match was struck and things were lit from there. And I went back to it and I never left. And there's moments where I feel like I want to quit or go nowhere near it because it's so intense, but it's how it should be when you love things in life. So I'm okay with it.
Because when I started this journey in the podcast, I found it became very lonely. You know, when you step outside the career path, the norm or the accepted hobbies, people kind of go, "Oh." And you seem to have been surrounded by a lot of great role models, people who kind of helped you on that path. What advice would you have for people who are starting their own path and, you know, they're not maybe finding the right people because, you know, it's almost like it's predestined for you to have that pep talk when you needed and then to obviously get asked to go on a national TV show. You kind of like, oh, you know, that helps as well. But how would you recommend to other people who are starting their own journey to find these kind of mentors, the role models, the help? Because it can be a lonely journey when you start your own path.
It is. Yeah. I think you just got to put it out there. I mean, that was the most important thing for me, is you got to put all the background noise and the other people behind you and just do your thing. If you love something, you really love it and you feel like it's for you, you just run with it and you kind of let everything else fade away. I think if I was the kind of kid who allowed myself to listen to what everyone else was saying or watch people's faces when I told them I was going to do card tricks for a living and not go to college, you know, that could eat at you. That could really affect you. So I think you just got to be proud of the fact that you found something that's for you and hold on to that. And and just let everything else fade away and be okay with failing, and don't let the moments that fail like taint what you love, because you're going to have moments where things don't work out. And because you care about it so much, it's going to hurt you. You can't make the fact that you love it ugly. You know, you can't make it this bad thing. You just have to go, I love this thing. And because I love it so much, it's going to be hard to manage the ups and downs, but it's for me and I'm here. And put it out there and keep pushing. And what's for you will be for you. And people will come to you. And I've been really, really fortunate to have so many remarkable people in my life. And I know there's plenty of kids out there that are talented, probably beyond where I was at that age, who don't have those resources. And I imagine it's hard. I mean, it was hard even with the resources, but you got to just keep putting it out there and be proud of the fact that you were one of the few people in the world that have found this thing that you really enjoy, and just own it.
I think you kind of know, don't you, when you're on that right journey, and those kind of people are drawn to you because of the energy that you put out.
So exactly.
Talking of like the energy that it gives out, what do you think the appeal of magic is? Is it that we all want to have that sense of surprise, that wonder, that kind of like, oh, where the fuck did that go? Like, what happened there? You know, is it that kind of we want to be fooled, that we have, that we all want to have this kind of belief that people can do these amazing things? You know, what would you say the appeal of magic is for most people?
Yeah, I think at its core for a lot of people, it's like the childlike sense of wonder is really strong. It's like in the same way that you had your Santa and Easter Bunny moments as a kid, it kind of gives you that as an adult again, where you have this moment where you're like, okay, is it or is it not real? But I feel like this wonder and I'm allowed to have this. You know, it's like you can walk downstairs and Santa Claus is at your front door and you're like, you have a moment where you're like, it's this real magical thing that you're seeing, you know, and it allows you to be that little kid again. And I think almost everyone loved magic as a kid or had a magic set as a kid because they wanted to be able to give that feeling that they had to others and understand it and be on the other side of this Christmas miracle when it comes to knowing what's real and what's not in the world. And I think it gives you that. I think it allows you to wonder. I think it makes the world less impossible, because the greatest thing about magic for me, which is not really what other, I'll say, normal people see, but with magic, you can create anything. You can walk around the world and be like, wow, it would be really cool if this car could drive through this bridge. It would be really cool if I could walk through water and breathe, you know, and figure out ways to make that happen. It makes everything in the world feel more possible. And as a spectator, I think it's interesting to sit there and allow anything to happen. You know, when you watch magic, there is no rules. There is no, well, he can or can't do that. It's, this person can do anything. You know, these things that I believe or think are impossible might just be possible. And for the next hour, I'm going to sit here and feel things that I haven't felt since I was a kid and just allow myself to feel wonder.
I love that. I love, because I've never actually asked another creator that, is, do you literally go around and see things and go, oh, I wish I could do that? Because like anytime I see somebody, I go, oh, well, could I interview that? Could I do a thing on that? I'm really interested in finding it. And it's, I know what you mean, it's that feeling of like, whoa, this is amazing, we can do. But I love seeing that look of like, whoa, when you do a card trick for somebody. Or I think I had a box of magic tricks when I was younger, and it was one of those, you hold the ball and it splits into the little balls with heat, and it was all these kind of little tricks. And I think that's what's happened, is people used to watch like these, you know, the guy in the suit, and it was very stale, very boring kind of tricks. And lately we've kind of got into the cool magic. I mean, we were talking about Chris Angel before we started, one of my favorite magicians. You know, I love how he puts this kind of badass side of magic, and you've got this kind of cool, not cocky, but like kind of self-assured, like it's you dialed up to 11.
Exactly.
How have you seen magic change since you saw like Sean Farquhar and all these other sort of people to the kind of magic you're doing now? Like, how do you define your style of magic, and how have you seen it evolve over the last, I know you've been doing it since you were about 7?
A little older, but yeah.
Older. She's like 8.
Yeah, it's like it might have been 8.
It's quite amazing that like we're still, you're still such a young person. I'm so used to people who've been in this for like 20, 30 years. And I'm like, God, she's only in school like recently.
I know.
It's amazing. It's amazing you've done so much at such a young age.
I don't think you appreciate just how unique and amazing you are to do this at such a young age. But
thank you.
Sorry, roughly, but how would you see it change?
It's a compliment, and I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, I'll say back in the day when I started, I think magic looked very different still at the time, even though it was 10-something years ago to where it is now. You know, I think when I started magic and you said you were a magician, it was kind of like, okay, it's like, you know, people don't know how to respond to it. Like, they kind of like magic or they don't like magic. It's like this unique, weird thing. Okay, this is the magic girl. She's in her little box. But now I think magic is doing better than it ever has because it's got a spot on TV for the first time ever in so many different lights. And I think for a long time when we thought of magic, there was David Copperfield or Criss Angel or there's this person. And that was it. That was the only idea of a magician you ever had. But now there's everything. And with shows like Fool Us, you see 100 different looking personalities, styles, types of magicians every year. And it gives people something that's relatable and familiar to look up to. And we've never had that. So I think magic's growing super quickly. And because we've seen it and been able to relate to it, connect us and see a version of ourselves in the performer on stage for the first time ever in magic, it's cool now. And now when you tell people, like I tell someone I'm a magician now, they're like, that's the coolest thing ever. And, you know, a decade ago, you just wouldn't have had that.
So do you think shows also like The Masked Magician and all these kind of shows where they show the how certain tricks are done, you know, like how the lady's sawn in half and all these sort of things, do you think that's actually helped magic as well? Because it's, even though it gave away the secrets, it's also allowed people to kind of see behind the scenes, but also made magicians think we need to up our games. We need to come to new senses of different tricks and styles. It's kind of helped people evolve past, I want to say, parlor tricks. I don't know if that's offensive, but you know what I mean? That kind of...
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I think it had its place in time, and while it may have got more people speaking about magic, I think there are better ways to do it, and there are better shows out there now that make magic good and allow it to be good and let people talk about it that way. I think it was, in the sense of a show, probably cheap, because when you do a magic trick, everyone wants to know how it's done, and you take away the value of it by just doing that right away. So I think that show is interesting to people as it gave them exactly what they wanted, but people don't actually want it. You know, magic is ruined. You know, it's ugly when you know how it's done. So while you may think you want it, you don't. And your job as a magician is to protect that and protect people's belief and wonder and allow them to stay there.
Because there's that clip of you levitating the table with that wee girl, and you can see that look of just, her mind is blown by this amazing thing you've done. And you've probably inspired her, like Sean Farquhar did you when he pulled the marker out to sign your, like the autograph. And I love that it's become that full circle, that you've come back and now inspired the next generation of people. And it must blow you away to be able to do that at such a young age. But you've talked about how you is you. You know, you dial your character up. It's just you as a person of what you put out there. How do you create then your act, and how do you kind of put yourself out there when you're the product, when you're the thing that people are valuing, judging? Because when it's a product that you've created, it's fine. But when it's you as a person that's getting judged, how do you eliminate that panic? Because I know you deal with nerves, and you said they never go away. I'm the same. 24/7, I'm shooting a brick. How do you deal with that when you are the product for sale? That sounded so bad.
No, it's a great question. And yeah, no, I love that. Thank you. It's an interesting thing to think about, because I love that I am myself on stage, and I love that who I am as a performer evolves with who I am as a person. I think it's great. I think it's familiar and relatable, and I just get to be me and really dive into who I am. But you're right. It's, you know, when you have a bad show or a bad moment, or you don't get exactly the response you're wanting, it's not just they don't like this character I played on stage. Like, it's not like they didn't like my acting. I went out there as me, you know, I cut myself open and flipped myself inside out and walked out on stage and went, this is the rawest version of me. And when that doesn't go the way that you want it, it can cut and it can hurt, but you got to be able to put those things aside, you know, and it's never as bad to the audience as it is to you. And I think when you're that vulnerable, everything kind of hits and feels worse. But I just hold on to the good moments and the great shows, and I let those sink in those moments. And, you know, I love that when people meet me after the show, they meet me and it's the same thing. And I just get to be myself. You know, I don't have to practice to be this character or this person. You know, when I have, like what you were saying about Full Circle, I love that when a kid runs up to me after the show, it's not like they just saw, you know, their a Disney character or a character in a movie. They saw a person and they get to meet this person, and they can be like that person if they want. It's not like this princess or this fairy tale or this superhero that'll be like, I'd love to be a superhero. I'm a magician and a human, and I'm relatable and familiar. And if a kid sees me do something and they dream about it, it's something that's possible. You know, when they meet me after that show, I'm possible for them. And I like that, if that makes sense.
I love that. I love that you've started to understand that sense of maturity and understanding that a lot of times it's people might say some negative stuff, but that's on them. You know, they're just a dickhead. You're always going to get people who troll and bad mouth and all that. But most people are so into the act and the presence and enjoyment of it that a lot of times it's because you've practiced it 10,000 times. You know that, well, my could have been slightly faster, that hide that better or whatever. Most people are kind of just blown away by the act, the ambience and that you're creating. And I mean, I remember listening to one interview you did where you talked about how you evolved as a person and how you then put that into the act. So as you grew and matured yourself, your act matured as well. And I love that you could even talk and think in those terms rather than I'm sticking to my act and I panic if not. How do you think you've evolved by over these years? Because I've watched some of your shows when you're obviously just starting to where you are now. Your stage presence throughout, even at such a young age, was terrifyingly good. You seem to just own the room no matter what you did. But how do you think you've grown as a person?
I think who I've been on stage has always been pretty in line with where I was in life and what I was doing. And so while I may look back at clips from me when I was starting and, you know, cringe, and not, I could watch a clip of me a year ago and barely get through it because, you know, you don't love watching yourself speak or perform a lot of the times. But it was where I was at the time, and I hit that mark on the head pretty well. And I've always been able to do that, I think. And I like that. And it always pushes me to go further. And when I push myself to go further in my career and become a better performer, it is, how do I enhance who I am as a person, you know? Because I have to give the audience more. I have to be this next version of performer that I want to be. And that is a direct correlation to me. So where do I go as a human being, you know, in my core to get to that level? It's not just what's the next great trick I can do or what's the next great script I can write. It is, how do I share myself as a human being with a room full of people and connect in a better way? And that's got me constantly thinking and evolving and becoming a better person and changing into different stages of my life, you know, with my career following hand in hand. And I love that, you know. It's an interesting perspective to put on myself.
Because you are, it's remarkable to have that at such a young age, but when you are doing these things, you know, I mean, you have this unique way of dealing with hecklers, with drunk people and stuff like that, you know, and you're able to have that level of enthusiasm in, you know, 6 shows, 8 shows a day and all these kind of things. But do you think performers can only learn these sort of nuances? Because anybody can learn tricks, but it's your way of the displaying it and selling it to the crowd and all the wee nuances in your act. Do you think that comes from experience, or are people born with that? Can it be really learnt? You know, the soft skills compared to the hard tricks?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. I think who I am as a person, I was born with. So I think the sarcasm and that confidence and that personality, I think a lot of that, it's in my DNA. It's who I am as a person. I think to be able to put that out there and manipulate it and use it and do it in just the right way is a skill that you have to learn. So I think it's a bit of a mesh of both. I think someone who's not naturally like me couldn't perform that the way I do. I mean, they could learn it, but it just wouldn't be natural for them. In the same way that there's performers out there I could never be, you know, I could learn their scripts and their tricks and put on their clothes and go out there, but I just couldn't naturally be them. So I think it's a mixture of that and then the determination and persistence. You know, for me, I've always thought that while I do feel like I have a natural knack for magic, I think it's this thing that I meant to do, and I think I'm naturally good at it in some senses. It's like talent isn't enough. You have to be determined and persistent, and you have to give it your everything and hit at it every single day to get better and better and to make it happen. So I think it's the fact that it's what I meant to do and it's who I am, but I think it's also that I want it bad enough to work at it and make it better all the time.
I love that. Like, you're like the sarcasm, the dry humor, the kind of in jokes, the things you do to just amuse yourself come across so well in your act. And I love how you can roll with people, and it's the little eye rolls, and it's the, you know, the interactions with the crowd when somebody tries to sort of up-showman you, you know, and you're kind of, I love that you're, as you grow as a person, you're growing in your act. And it took me forever to realize I should be doing the same in this show. And I think sometimes creators have that. They follow the bigger people without realizing they're the unique thing. They're the selling point. They're the USP in their act. And it's hard to imagine that you have bad stage fright. I remember you saying it, that you you always feel it. You panic and you feel sick about it. And then you kind of just go on and do it. And it's hard to imagine you, because you just seem so comfortable and mature and able. I mean, I still get it myself, and I know how a lot of people struggle with it.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people who've said they've just always feel it. It's always there. They name their fear, and they just kind of say, not now, Harold, fuck off. I'm about to go on stage or whatever. And that just because you've named it, you've disassociated. I was kind of like, what the f-? And I tried it and it works. So I tell it to bugger off all the time. You know, but how do you deal with it? I really, because it becomes a character that you just kind of go, nah, I'll deal with you later. How do you deal with yours? And what advice would you give to people?
I mean, personally, I think I should start naming my fears Harold and just saying fuck off. And maybe that'll help. So I appreciate that.
You never know.
Life hack. It could work, but I think I acknowledge what it is. I do what I do a million times, and as soon as I get on stage, it's gone anyways. And for me, it's not a fear of not being good enough. It's just about not being as good as I want to be. I think I care, and I feel like this thing that I have in my life is a gift, and I want to share that gift in the way that it's been given to me. So it's just scary not to do that, and I think I'll always have those nerves in a healthy amount, but they're gone as soon as I get on stage. So I just stand there, I take a deep breath, you know, with my nose in between the gap and the curtain before I go out stage, and I take a deep breath and I just go, you're gonna go do your thing, and you do your thing, and the second I step out there, the fear is gone and I am alive and switched on, and I am who I'm meant to be as a person in that second, and everything else is like the lead up to get there. And then I'm out there and I'm me and I'm it, and then I'm lesser all the other times. I'm who I am as a person, but I'm 100%, and then I'm on stage and I'm 110 again, and I love that.
Do you think that's something that you need to have, that kind of thing that just says, I'm here, this is the part of you that was maybe going a different path, and now it's just to remind you, you know, that there is another world there that makes you enter the performer version of yourself?
Yeah, I think I got to take it in and acknowledge it as much as possible. And I think how I am before the show always matter. I mean, I always try and meet my audience before the show. It's just, for me, it makes me feel like I'm performing for friends, and I like seeing them, and I like being familiar, and I like good. And I love meeting my audience before the show. And also, I care a lot about my volunteers. As much as you can do a great show with any volunteers, I think I love the playfulness and the fun, and I want to be able to use that, you know, as much as I can. But I think it's the moments before the show where, you know, before every show, I stand in the back of the theater, somewhere in the room where I can see the people, or I peek behind the curtain, you know, whatever the venue is, and I look around and I try and let the feeling of where I am sink in. To be standing in a room and look around and see hundreds of people sitting in their seats waiting for something, and actually acknowledge the fact that all these people, no matter what they're doing or where they were in their lives, they're sitting down here and they're waiting and they're taking time out of their day to see something, and the thing they're going to see is you. And that's pretty special. So all you got to go do is go out there and be you. You know, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be remarkable. You don't have to worry about getting everything right. Just have fun, because they're here to have fun. Have fun with them and be a part of it. And I try and, you know, have that moment before I go on stage as much as I possibly can. And that kind of gets me into the right gear, so to say.
It's quite a unique way to think about it. It's like that you're sitting there terrified about going on until you get into that feeling where it's people are paying to come and see you because they're fans of yours. And, you know, creators have this moment of kind of, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. And people are desperate to see you, and you could put anything out there, and they would be happy because it's you performing. And I think sometimes it's our brain just goes,
Oh yeah.
I need to give you something to worry about. I need to give you something to panic about. So how do you go about creating the act? How much of it is by dependent on the venue? And how much is your sort of evolution as a person? I mean, do you prefer sleight of hand stuff, interacting with the volunteer stuff? Do you prefer the grand escape stuff, you know, where you've been inspired by Houdini and these sorts of people? How do you plan an act? Because, you know, Penn and Teller is slightly different, obviously, compared to if you go to do the card shows and stuff, compared to maybe a smaller venue. How much play is there in your act and how much you can play and create it?
Yeah, I think for me, because I've had this progression with age, whereas it's just kind of been where I'm at, where I was younger and getting into it, I did cards and I kind of slightly did bigger stuff than I did the escapes. And so I've got all these different facets to me as a performer that, I mean, not necessarily all performers have that. Some people just go, I'm a stage magician and do that, never try anything else. And but because I've kind of opened myself up to trying everything and, you know, just being, okay, well, today I feel like I'm here in my life and I want to try these things and try all these different things. It gives me the ability to be a bit more versatile in my set for the venue. You know, I, as much as I don't love doing close-up show, I could do a close-up show and I could do something that I really like. But for me, you know, I love just playing. I don't care about the size of the room. I don't care if there's 2,000 people there or 200 or 20 or two. And I think I say this a lot in interviews, but for me, I just love people and I love communicating and conversing and being a part of the conversation. Yeah. So whatever my material is, as long as I just get to be myself, it doesn't matter. I love I'd go out there with the microphone, whether I have a deck of cards or a trick or whatever, you know, while the magic is important and a part of the story. For me, I feel like I perform in a very stand-up comedy kind of way where I'm bantering with the audience and having fun and I'm a part of the conversation. So for me, it doesn't really matter the exact type of magic. Well, I do want it to be fitting to me. It is my tool to do what I'm meant to do. It's not my entire show.
It's time for a quick break. There are millions of potential products to buy, so how do you know which ones are worth your hard-earned money? Simple. You go to nextlevelguy.com/affiliates and explore those that will transform and improve your life. You'll find deals, listener exclusives, and special offers with some great companies. Recommendations are 100% honest and only on items Ian has tried or believes in. The companies showcased will make you a better man in all areas of your life. Simply go to nextlevelguy.com/affiliates and level up.
So how, after sort of learning about yourself and discovering all these amazing things and evolving and trying all these tricks and that, how did COVID affect you? I mean, because I know I had really bad mental health problems during it. I carried on eating like I was still training jiu-jitsu and became a chunker, well, more than this. And a lot of people crumbled, lost themselves, etc. Oh, you're very polite. Thank you. But how would you define your time during COVID? And how do you think it kind of affected you as a creator and as a person, not having the ability? Because you got the job in the, you know, in the bike shop, and then you started feeling that lure to the 9-to-5s. How did you feel that change to you? Or was there always that feeling at the back, I need to get back on stage?
No, I think I let go of it quite a lot during that because it was a couple years and I just really settled into where I was. And I think, you know, every time I was reminded of it, I wanted to run back to it. You know, every time somebody said something about it, I wanted to go back there. But I think part of me was also a little bit scared. You know, part of me just didn't want to dive back into this thing because I'm comfortable and it's stable and familiar. And while I love my career and I would never change it for the world, you know, when you're a kid getting into the world and you get a high, like it was a high paying job. I was doing something that I loved. It was stable. I loved my colleagues. I had fun every day. You know, I was around this, it was this other passion I loved. It was just easy and simple and it was right and it fit. You know, it wasn't right for me. It wasn't for me. There was more for me, but it was hard to acknowledge that, you know, because I was a 16, 17, 18 year old kid at the time who went into work every day and did this thing that she liked and got paid a great amount of money and was just stable. And it was that, or do you quit this and dive into a world of uncertainty where your whole life feels like it rides on every decision you make, and you have to do these great things, and it hurts you, and it scares you, and it's vulnerable, and it's big, and it's unpredictable, and you don't have stability, you don't have the finances, you don't know, you know, it's just riskier. So it was harder to make that jump, but the jump is worth it because of the value of what that career is to me and what it is now.
Because that can be the tricky thing. You know, most people change when they've got like a big event, like they've had a heart attack or they've been made redundant or whatever it is. It's that moment when you're in a comfy position. And yeah. A lot of people don't change because the pain isn't there enough to make the change. And that can be the hardest thing when, yeah, I would go and do that. But, you know, I would go for a run, but my bed's more comfortable. I would try for a new job, but it's good enough where I am now. And for you to be able to fight back when a lot of people just gave up is remarkable on your sort of resilience and your character. But it also helps when a national TV show phones you up and says, do you want to come and do some, you know, do you want to come and do one of your tricks for us? But to have that as one of your first tricks back after COVID, and, you know, you went in there with all this crap that was happening and you amazed the guys, you know, they give you amazing feedback. How on earth do you kind of go from, I'm going to work in the bike shop to, yeah, I'm going to go and inspire millions with my act?
I mean, honestly, Foolus saved my career. And I have to say that for the time, you know, that it happened in my life and how everything played out. I mean, I was in a comfortable job. I was in a comfortable relationship. And I had those knacks of people trying to push me, and my mentor and Sean was the one who was like, they're doing auditions and casting again. You should feel something or reach out to them or let them know that you're on the map. And just, you know, COVID's kind of ending, put it back out there, whatever. And it was just like, okay, you know, but it was like, he texted me about that and I left work that day. I told my boss, I'm like, oh, I've got to go handle this emergency, you know, because it came back into my life, even 5%, and it was my whole world. You know, I got that text, I'm like, I gotta go. And I went to film this video and put it out there, and then they were interested, and then it was just this thing that I was meant to do. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do the show. It's been on my bucket list since I was a kid. It doesn't mean I'm pursuing magic. I'm just gonna go do the show. And then, I mean, I imagine you've heard, because you've listened to some of my other stuff. It was, you know, I was in this relationship and I had this job, and I quit my job to kind of go do the show and pursue these things. And then, you know, the relationship with the person I was in the relationship with, he'd passed away, you know, the day before I flew out to film the show. And it really, I think in some ways, both had a hand in saving my life from where it was at and saving my career, because I honestly believe, and I think I've said it before, that if I didn't have something that I loved that much, that I cared about that much, I would have sat there forever. You know, after I lost him and kind of stopped my job, I probably would have sat on my floor crying for the rest of my life because I didn't have something that mattered enough. And because I had that show and because it was so close in time, I didn't get to like sit in the grief long enough for it to consume me, which is scary and horrifying. It was the hardest thing I ever did in my life, you know, to go on the biggest stage you've ever been on at that age after not performing for 3 years. I mean, I hadn't been in front of an audience. It was my first trick after COVID, and it's on the biggest stage I've ever been on in my life. And I just lost the person I was in love with the day before. It was this absolute, like I said, I don't know what part of me did that. I mean, even now I'm horrified. If somebody told me I had to do that now, I could never do that or do it again. No. And I don't know what version of me got through it. But it was a saving grace. The fact that I love what I do enough for it to matter more than the shit and the horrible things that can happen in my life is really special. And that was the perfect reminder of it. And that was what the exact moment that I needed to remind myself how much I loved it and how important it was. And no matter how comfortable my life gets, how shit it gets, how good it gets, how bad it gets, I got to do this thing that's meant for me because it is why I'm here.
That's
a very passionate tangent to go to.
I love it. I love the fact that you can speak so like emotionally, delicately about it. And it goes back to the, you're not playing a character. You know, you're not an actress who says, no, I need some time away. You used all of that raw emotion to put it out there, to give that performance that inspired and changed so many people. And, you know, that kind of, to do that after such a hardship, that is, most people would never have the courage to do that or be able to do that. And for you to go out on national TV and just fucking kill it, you know, like you would not know anything was wrong when you go into that Gabriella, the performer role there. And you're probably been eaten up later on, but I love that you can talk so openly about this, because it would inspire so many other people who are in, having darker times. I mean, I've struggled with depression, seasonal affliction disorder, etc. And I know what it can be like when you're down at that point. You need something to pull out. And it's like you're saying, you having that passion to then to pull you back up is amazing. How did you deal with that sort of upswing after it then? You know, suddenly everybody knows your name. You're maybe getting looter comments from some idiots on Instagram. People are wanting to book you. People are desperate for you to come and do your like corporate acts and stuff like that. How did you deal with, because you run your own management. How did you deal with being Gabriella, the performer, the businesswoman, the social media expert, the person? You know, how did you deal with all that kind of personas?
You make me sound so impressive.
I'll write your bios for you, don't worry.
Yeah, please, just do all of my intros until the end of time. I dove back into it, and it was so natural for me, honestly. I mean, it was a lot of things that I had to learn and learn very quickly, but it was just where I was meant to be, and it just fit, and it came to me. And when these opportunities started coming to my life, I just pursued them the way I always imagined I would have, and I just dove back into it and let it happen. You know, I had a balance where I was in my life of, okay, now my career is taking off and these things are happening and I'm getting everything I want. And I'm like, hold on for a second. This awful thing just happened to you and you need to be able to do both. Like, you can't just put this thing in a box and be like, that's back home, and then go out and tour and live. And that's kind of, you know, what I did. I filmed Fool Us and then I started traveling for shows and then I backpacked Europe, and it was like I hadn't been home. And for me, it was this crazy world of, when I came home, it kind of reminded me, oh, you were this person before, you know, you love somebody and they, all of that. It was just a reminder. And for me, I had to be able to balance, you know, this, I'm Gabriella Lester, superhuman magician, going to take over the world on this great path to success, with here's young, vulnerable kid, teenager, who's still growing up and going through life and handling all these things. And you got to be that person too. You know, you can't just ride with the fact that your career is great and move on with that. You know, you need to still work through all the other parts of you in your life. And these last 3 years of your life where you've just been a kid and you've just been young and you've just had this job and you've just been normal, you know, you can't just ride this wave. You've got to be able to step away from the glory of the flashing lights and people that love you and life on the road and be okay with being that normal person and processing those feelings. Otherwise, you just get addicted to one and forget the other, and that just consumes you and you lose the core version of who you are, I think.
Because it must be really difficult to have that upswing and, you know, and then suddenly, like, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the grief? How do you let it out? Because a lot of, we're not taught how to deal with loss, with grief, how to deal with, like, suicidal thoughts, negativity, you know. And a lot of kids nowadays, they, you know, they look at, like, celebrities because they don't know who they are as a person, so they try to mimic friends and celebrities and stuff. And did you find, like, things like journaling? Did you use kind of just needing to get away to kind of get your thoughts together? How did you deal with all that raw emotion that was going in with you at the time?
I think, yeah, it was a mixture of what I'm fortunate enough to call healthy vices, which is writing and journaling and talking and listening to music. You know, I was really fortunate enough that I never dove down a path of, you know, substance abuse or, you know, different vices in any form. For me, I just found things that were hard, but they worked, and they took longer, but they worked. So it was a lot of just journaling and writing. And I've always had the approach when I go through something in life, I want to talk about it as much as I can. I want to dive into those feelings as much as I can. Like, I never want to just put it in a box and let it be this bad thing. I want to unpack it as much as I possibly can when it happens, so I become okay with it and I can talk about it, and nothing bad that happens to me can ever consume me. So I think it was finding as many ways as I possibly could to feel the feelings when they had and ride out those waves. And there were moments. I mean, it was lost. Even though I was on this career high, there were still moments where I'd do a great show and then instinctively go to call this person that had been in my life for a long time, and then realize and have those reminders of this loss and this grief that I had to work through. And, you know, a lot of these highs were met with a punch to the face, you know, of this hurt. So I just had to acknowledge that it was there and spend as much time as I needed, even if it put my career on hold, to work through those feelings until I was okay with it. And I feel like I'm in a good place with a lot of that now, and I have been for a while. And it's just because I I'm not in a rush. Well, I want everything in my career right now, and I want all the success and all this everything. Yeah. I want to get there the right way, and I want to get there okay and as stable as I can. Well, you can't control what happens to you in life. I want to just take my time being surrounded by the right people, doing it the right way, taking the right steps, and not just getting a taste of Hollywood and running after it.
Fuck, I wish I had your level of maturity and understanding when I was 20. You know, I still head up my own arse half the time. And to have that level of understanding about life and yourself is remarkable, you know, and it shows in you as a person and as you've grown and dealt with some things that would just knock people for six. You've kind of learned to understand it and taken the time away and to heal, and you're open about it. You know, so many people talk about only their best things. The fact that you can be honest and open, you will help so many people who are going through similar. You talk there about vices, healthy vices. How many people's healthy vices is tying themselves upside down in a straitjacket?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably insane at the same time. So while I do say all of these things, I'm honestly probably a lunatic. I'd say. But it's my greatest vice is being creative. So as odd as it may look or as unique as it may be, it is who I am.
Is that the kind of, the Harry Houdini style stuff, you know, like, did you kind of start researching magic when you were younger and you looked and thought, right, that's the kind of stuff I want to do? You know, how do you deal with that emotions of getting whipped upside down and the panic of taking it off? Or do you, you know, is it falling back to your level of training? Or do you enjoy that kind of all the eyes are on you, the stress, the panic, the blood rushing to your head? Do you, you know, is it because the bike riding and things like that, you enjoy the more of the exhilaration of it? What is it that you get out of it, do you think?
I think it is creating something out of nothing. I think for me, when I am trying to create this performer I want to be, and I look to history at what's really worked for other people and what's been great, when I find things that inspire me or these creative things that I want to put into my career and my life, it is going, okay, how do I do that? And how do I make that? And what can I make out of nothing? I mean, the straitjacket will always be my favorite example of that, is when I fell in love with magic history and Harry Houdini, and I wanted to chase that. It was nothing. When I started, I was hanging upside down on monkey bars in the playground. Like, that is where that act started, you know? And now I tour the world and it's been on TV and it's this big thing. But it wasn't like this set out plan. I was inspired by something and I went, that's what I want to do. But there was no roadmap to do it, you know? And I just got to create what that was. I used to hang upside down in my backyard and be like, hey, Dad, can you check on me a bit? Hey, can we get handcuffs for Christmas? Hey, we need to replace the front door lock because I picked it and I've not done well with that. So it was just this ability to be comfortable in craziness and pick something that seems impossible to do and find a way to do it. And it's not a pretty process. Being creative is not pretty or perfect. There aren't these steps of, I did this intensive training and then I did this and then I did this. And I was like, no, I had no idea how to do it. And I asked a lot of questions and probably got a lot of things wrong. And I probably wouldn't teach anyone the way that I learned how to do it, but it worked for me. And it just allowed me to be creative and find my own path. And I think it's pride that I get out of it. I think it is that artistic sense of, I want to create this piece of art or this thing, and I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to make it happen. And then once it's done, I get to just feel proud because it's mine and I did it. So I think maybe that.
Oh, that's a great answer. And I love how your parents are just kind of like, what's she done now? Right, fine. Okay, we need to replace the door. Oh, she's hanging upside down again. Right, okay. I wonder what the neighbors are thinking. You know, they're letting you find yourself, and they're just letting you divulge yourself into these activities. But when things did go wrong, how did you, you know, when a trick just wouldn't come for you, you know, you couldn't get the sleight of hand, or, you know, you were tied upside down and almost knocked yourself out or whatever it was, how do you kind of deal with that? And how do you deal with the six shows a day? You know, when you're tired, you're depleted from sleep, you're desperate to eat, somebody's been a dickhead in the audience. How do you deal with the frustration of not getting things the 100% right? Because I can see the passion you have. How do you deal with things when they don't go right?
I mean, I don't have a perfect answer for that because it's something that I still struggle with and I'm trying to navigate. I think at the end of the day, I just try and remind myself why I'm doing it and why I'm here and about the good in it. And things go wrong all the time. And I think that advice that I mentioned earlier is probably something that I'm trying really hard to listen to. And that is not letting failure, things that don't go right, allow me to fall out of love with this thing that I'm doing. Because it's easy to do that when there's these ugly moments and these bad moments that really hurt you, that make you feel like you're doing the wrong thing. And you just have to remind yourself, you know, why you love something. So I think for me, it is just taking a step back from this current moment, like taking a step out of the, I've done 30 shows this week and I'm exhausted and I'm sick and my last tour, there were moments where it's like I was a day and then a day where it's, I'm sicker than I've ever been. I'm in the hospital, and they're injecting steroids into me to make me feel okay. And then I leave the hospital to go to a show and then I'm back in emergency care after. And there's those moments where it's like, what in the world is going on? Why am I here? Why am I doing this? I am exhausted. But you have to take a step back and go in the same way when you're sick, you only feel sick and it feels like you only remember the moments when you're sick and you're like, God, feeling good was nice. I remember that. You have to take a step back and be like, this will pass. It'll all pass. It's all just waves that you go through and you ride out. And I will be proud of what I do if I keep doing it. And I just got to take a step back from whatever that negative feeling or emotion or wherever I'm at and look at the bigger picture, because there's always a bigger picture. And with my career, it keeps getting bigger. And I love that I can just step back far enough to go, this will pass and it'll keep getting great. And it'll get bad again, but it'll get good again.
It's like Michael Keaton when he's on about like how this will pass, you know, the good times will pass, the bad times will pass, the worry, the whatever it is, this too shall pass. And I think that's the thing, is we get so focused on our mistakes, we forget all the amazing things that we're doing, and we beat ourselves up about something so small that most people didn't even catch it. And it's really difficult, especially when you're maybe a bit of a perfectionist. And, you know, to come out of hospital to do a stage show and then go back in, it's just insanity. But I think that is you. You know, you would never know from watching the clips and stuff like that. I mean, but you do put up clips that maybe people kind of go, what a knob that guy was being, or what, you know, and you deal with it so well. What has it taught you with dealing with drunk, lewd, fun, out there, small kids, adults? You know, what have you learned about human interactions and what we take for granted, and, you know, that child sense of wonder that we all seem to have?
Yeah, I mean, those videos get some awful comments towards the guys, and I get it, and I understand people's state of mind, but you also have to remember, almost everyone that's going to be on your stage has never been in front of people before. And if you were in that audience and you got pulled up there, you'd be thrown, you'd be uncomfortable, you'd be just as vulnerable as a performer was before the show, except you've never done this before. So,
and you say stupid things.
Stupid things, act silly, try and be funny, and that gets lost in translation and messed up. I mean, guys will say stupid things in my show when people will come and be like, this guy should be burned at the stake. And I'm like, it's not the intention of that. It's a weird moment that happens and it gets
handled. You think it's a joke and,
Yeah, you know, it gets handled in a comical sense. And I think for me, it's just, I don't take things to heart. I never leave a show and go, I can't believe he said that, or that person was that, or that. It's just, humans are humans, and they're gonna human. Whatever that means is, people say things, and you just learn how to handle it and take it in, and it's just what it is. I mean, I've never, which is weird because I've had shows where I've had a volunteer who's been a little crude or really drunk or try to impress his buddies in the audience and said some, you know, almost disgusting things in a sense, and it's handled, it's whatever, and it doesn't ding me at all. I feel nothing. Like, I don't feel attacked or hurt or afraid or harassed or anything. It just, he got up there and said something stupid and it was handled and the show went on and the audience felt safe and comfortable with me being, you know, the leader of that, and it happened. And then I've had like stage managers or techs come up to me like, I need a minute. Like, I cannot believe that a man would say those things. And it's an understandable, you know, when it's not you who's in control, it can be frightening. And I get that. But for me, it's just understand that things will happen and people will say things, whether it's on stage or in public or in your life. And you just don't let it ding you. Just do your thing.
I think that all helped so many people, because there's a lot of people who would have taken that personally rather than he's just had a drink or he's trying to impress his friends, or, you know, that person's doing that because they're just a bit of an arsehole, you know, but it doesn't mean it's anything at all. They would do it to any performer. We have to just okay, you know, but not to carry on. And I used to carry on like sometimes negative comments. I would think, oh, end of the world, rather than that's just a troll. Or that says a lot about that person's life, that they took the time to actually comment something negative. And what's your opinion then on people who value women as by the looks, the, you know, female performers? Because you've got this hilarious male magician hat. How sad is it in this day and age that people would judge you on, oh, she's wearing leather trousers, she's, you know, what, look at what she's wearing, rather than the amazing stuff that you can do, the sense of wonder that you create in all these people. Does it bug you that sometimes women are still judged by beauty rather than talent?
I do, yeah. I mean, I think about it often. I think in the world of magic, it's just kind of a natural reaction because it's been this male-dominated industry before, that when you see a woman, it's kind of this odd thing. And it just happens sometimes when, you know, you see someone and you see their beauty first, and it's hard to believe that they're talented, and especially in an industry where women haven't really been extremely publicly represented by a means of talent. You know, women were the assistants. When it came to magic, women were the beautiful, you know, people on stage, and that was all that they were. So I think it's hard for people to adjust to that, and that's just kind of how it is. But I work really hard because I know I get opportunities in my life because I'm a girl, or because they need a token female on the show, or because they need to book women, or because whatever. I know that I get opportunities because of that, but I never let them just be that. I never just go, oh, this is great. Things come to me. People want me. There's an opening in the industry. Anytime they need a woman, there's so few that I get it. Like, I never just let it be this easy thing. I still always try to work my ass off for everything I get. Even, you know, if I don't deserve it when I get the call, I do everything by the time of the performance to make sure that I deserve that role and to be there. And when people think about me, well, you can't always control it. When people leave my show, or they meet me, or they know me, or they hear about me, when people think Gabriella Lester, I want them to go, she's talented. Oh, and maybe she's attractive too, or that's a subsidiary or a second thought, but I want to do everything in my career for my talent to come first. And if appearance is a factor, for it to factor in later.
No, that's a great answer. You know, it's the fact that you're aware that maybe you do get the opportunities here and there, but you're going to take them. You're not doing it just because you're going to turn up and go, hey, what do you want me to, you know, you're going to earn it. You're going to showcase your talent. And I love that you don't shy away from dealing with the BS when it comes, but you will take it every opportunity and run with it and be talented and show people, you know, you're a badass. You can do these amazing things. How would you take this now? What's the evolution? You know, like, say you could wave a wand, and do whatever you wanted. You had all the resources in the world. How would you, I'm a Harry Potter fan, I can't get it out of my head, you know, like, if you had all the tricks and resources possible, what do you want this brand to be? You know, are you going to continue just trying to find yourself in the world and let your act reflect that? Do you want to be your own stage show? Do you want, well, more stage show? Do you want to be on a certain channel, TV show? Do you want to take magic in a certain direction and be known for something? How do you want to take this as you age from 20?
Yeah, I mean, to answer that honestly, I want all of it. I want everything. I wanted to make as big of an impression on the magic industry in the world as I possibly can. I want to come up with as many impossible original feats as I can and put them out there and do them in the right way. I want to get as far to the top as I can get while looking around and still loving the people I'm surrounded by and how I got there. But I whatever I do with my career, I want to make it as big as possible. Like, I think I reached a point a few years ago when somebody told me, stop reaching for the roof and just go for space, you know, and if you hit something below that, it's still much better than you ever thought you would get. So for me, I'm a huge dreamer. And I work towards the biggest possible things I can think of in my life. And I get a lot of amazing things along the way to trying to achieve these possible goals. So I want to create a TV show and a touring show, and I want to travel the world, and I want to work with kids, and I want to inspire the next generation. But the most important thing for me short term and currently is creating the performer in myself that I wish that I had to look up to when I was a kid. So when I put in the bricks and pieces to building this big, you know, mansion of my career, I want to do that on the foundation that this person I'm going to be at the top, or whoever I am in 10 or 20 years, wherever that is, or however big that is, I want that person to be the kind of human being I wish I had to look up to as a kid and go, that's who I want to be, because I didn't really have that, you know? And it's not necessarily a woman or male thing, but it's when you're a kid and you look at all these people in the world and you're like, oh, I want to be her. I want to be Taylor Swift. I want to be Selena Gomez. It's important to see something that's familiar and relatable. And we've never had that in the history of magic. And now it's there. And now that's a role that I can acknowledge and be aware of. And when I go to create this brand, it's not just about being badass and doing these insane daredevil things. It's also about being the kind of person that little girls and little boys and little kids can go to and be like, that's something I could be, and that's possible. And that for me is probably more important than, I mean, it is, it's more important than fame or success or whatever that is. It's who I get to impact and having a platform that's large enough to do that to as many people as I can.
I love that. I mean, that really resonated with me, because that's why I started my podcast. I couldn't find a show that actually found out real things about people, that didn't just give the, you know, the cookie cutter and you could change the name at the top. I wanted to actually find out about the weaknesses, the worries, the stresses, how they became better people. And I love the fact that you're the same person here as you are off camera, as you're on at your show. You're not a character. You're not somebody that we go, oh, we have to get into the zone, or we have to edit it before it goes out. You just kind of, you are who you are. Do you think then that there's this difference between sort of passion versus calmness, this ego versus kind of just chill? You know, how does it all work best for you? Is it just being you, dialing it up a wee bit, you know, making the sarcasm a bit stronger, a bit more display? You know, because I find if I'm, say, jiu-jitsu, if I'm angry, I'm terrible. If I'm completely relaxed, I'm terrible. That bit in between seems to be just that level that works well. Do you find as a performer you need that balance between the two, the yin and the yang?
Yeah, definitely. And first of all, I will say you're doing a great job. I mean, I've loved these questions. This has been one of my favorite conversations I've ever had about all of this stuff. So you're doing a great job. And thank you for that. And to answer your question, it's, yeah, I mean, balance, I think, is one of the most important things in all of this. And finding happiness in the things that aren't the insane, you know, not just loving, I did a great show and they loved me and it was amazing. I got a standing ovation and they all wanted my autograph and they all loved it and they all clapped in tears. Well, as great as you should love a perfect show, it's, you got to teach yourself to love the little things of it too. You know, you got to love practicing, you got to love traveling, you got to find little moments that you like to be able to have the balance, where it's just like, you can't just say, I love this adrenaline rush, I love this high, and when it's not gone, I just want it back, and I'm nothing until it's back. It's, you got to be okay with being nothing. And for me, when I come home from tours or shows, I just love being nothing. Like, I love coming home and just going, today I'm going to be a person who just sits on the floor and listens to vinyl, like listens to music all day. And that's all I'm going to be. You know, I don't need to be a superhero. I don't need to be chasing it 24/7. Well, I feel like I am. I think it's okay to just be okay with who you are without all of that, you know. And for me, it's really important. It's just still love that I am who I am. If I never did a show again, well, I would probably be a far worst version of my life, I would still love who I am as a person. You know, I don't need it. I want it and it's for me, but I love who I am without it. And that's just how I try and approach the balancing, is when I come home, is just find a lot of joy and value in things that aren't in control of other people, that aren't the applauses or the accolades or the awards, things that are just about you.
I love that. I love how you can see, like, the, you know, the vinyl behind you and it's like stacked up and
my corner.
You can just imagine you staring at the window, just chilling and enjoying that. And I think that's the side of people we don't always see. It's, you know, we always see the polishedness, the kind of the rock and the suits and all that kind of stuff. And social media is kind of letting us see the real people now. And I think that's, it's remarkable. So what feedback metrics, I hate how clinical that sounded, are you using then? Is it just the joy that you get from this, the joy in the wee girl's eyes when you were levitating the table? You know, you sort of alluded to it just now, but what is your definition of success? How do you look and go, yeah, that performance was great? Or are you literally just every day giving your best and then you're rolling into the next one like, let's see what goes?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could be nonchalant enough sometimes to just go, whatever happens, happens, because But I think for me is I just keep pushing, no matter what happens, good or bad, is I just keep going for it and keep tracing. And I'm in it for the creativity and the things that come out of it, because it's all the conversations I have that I love. You know, when I set a goal for myself and I set this impossible thing, it's so far away, but the journey to get there is really fun. And I haven't looked at that before. And I think a lot of my life, I set these goals and until I got them, it was just like, I want to do all these things and I haven't done them yet. And I just feel unaccomplished. And I feel like there's this list of things of this person that I'm not, that I want to be. And it's just kind of diminishing. And as I've gotten older, I've kind of learned to just not chase that mountain view at the end, to look around on that whole walk up. And that's where I'm at now, I think, in my life, where it's, I've got these huge goals and these things that I want, but I'm not only going to be successful once I get there. I'm successful the whole time I'm doing it. You know, every conversation I have that inspires me or I feel creative or gets me a step closer, that's an accomplishment. That's something to be proud of. You know, every single dividend hole and U-turn and every single way on that path to get where I'm going is just as important as getting there. So I have tried my best to not define my success by, okay, once I have a Broadway show, I made it, because it's not that. It's as long as I keep doing what I do and I love it and I keep chasing it and I keep trying to be better and become better and do bigger things, I've made it. I feel like I've made it every day. And while I want more, I'm exactly where I want to be and I know where I'm going to go next, and that's exciting.
I love that. I love how you're not, oh, I need to have a 5 out of 5 review. You're just kind of like, I just want to find out about life. I want to find out about myself and sort of go from there. How do you deal then? Because, you know, like if you are doing this once, you maybe give a great performance. You're doing like amazing performances show after show. How would you advise somebody listening to go into these hotels, go into the Airbnb, go into the stage dressing room? You know, I don't know if you've got like a certain, you know, you like to hopscotch or, well, you know, to get ready and all these kinds. How do you make these things your space, you know, so you can relax enough at home, recover and deal in hotel rooms and make them homely to then perform at such an extraordinary level in the show? Because if you're working away from home, a lot of people phone it in because they're getting paid and they don't really care. Mm-hmm. How do you make your space like you've got in the corner just now in a hotel room so you can be Gabriella the performer, not just phoning it in, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I love that. No one's ever asked anything like that, and I love that question because I do things for that. I mean, little things. I like traveling with a candle and lighting a candle when I get to a hotel room and just trying to feel like I'm at home and listening to music. And when I'm in a new city for a week or a couple weeks, I'm in that city like I live there. Like, I don't focus on the show or this performance the whole time. You know, I just let it be. This is just my life. You know, I live my life here in the city during the day, and I go to the theater and do the show at night, and it's my life. And during the day, I just walk and I listen to music and I go to the same coffee spot every day, and I just try and settle into a routine so it doesn't always feel like I'm on the move. I just try and settle into every place I'm in. It's harder when you're there for a day. But I just try and feel like I'm at home. I always like getting picked up from the airport because it makes me feel like I'm coming home to something, and I'm not, you know, and I never feel like a stranger. So just little subtleties and things like that. But just being able to relax and just being excited to come home. And I also love my alone time. I love it. And people don't always see that because I love being around people and I'm an extrovert.
Yeah.
But I love coming home and doing nothing and listening to music and sitting in the bath for 3 hours, which is probably so unhealthy for you as a human being to do.
One of my favorite things, hands down, away from people, just hot water, and you can put a film or something on. Oh, bless.
Yeah, so I do that every day. That's it for me. It's like I do a show, good or bad, whatever happens. I come home from the theater and I have a bath, or I lie in bed, or I relax, and it doesn't matter what happened in that room. I did my best and I gave it my all, and now I'm home and you're only left with you. And that's something I had to adjust to when I was traveling when I was younger, is you get really caught up in the storm and the surrounding of people and all these things going on and eyes on you all the time. But there's those really lonely moments where you go from being in a theater with hundreds of people that are standing for you and cheering you and shouting your name to an empty room when you're on the floor on your hands and knees, packing up your props at 3 a.m. and it's silent and it's dark and there's no life in a theater, you know, and it's like an empty museum all of a sudden. And that's lonely. So if you're not cool with yourself and you don't love the moments where it's just you, it can be really consuming because that gets really lonely. And you also, when you're on the road, it's not like you don't share it with anybody. You know, you have the greatest show of your life and then you walk back into your apartment with all this joy and you look around, you're like, there's nothing and no one here. You know, it is just me. I get to tell myself how great it is and that's it. So you just gotta be okay and really cool. And through that, I think is why I learned that I loved my alone time and how I got so comfortable, because I think I wasn't. I would always been an extrovert and always loved being around people and I was always chasing that. And I think until I was forced to be alone and acknowledge the ups and downs and only have the responses of me and no one else, did I become comfortable with just having myself to talk to.
I love that. I love that. We're very similar in that sense, that kind of, because just now while I'm trying to find out what the hell I want to do in this ball, this spinning ball we call Earth, you know, I'm like, I'm single just now. So I kind of enjoy this podcast because it lets me put that creative thing out, you know, lets me be me. But I love just chilling, throwing on the bath. And I love how you've found yourself. You know, you're not playing the character like certain rock bands where they destroy hotels and that. You're just kind of being switching off from performer to being person. You've got that ability to switch. Do you find that helps having like Sean Farquhar, the International Brotherhood of Magicians? You have these networks that allow you to teach you the tricks of the trade, so to speak?
Yeah, also another great question. And the fact that you know that stuff is great. So thank you. I think those people play a huge role in it because they kind of hold my hand through all of it. And I've also, the benefit for me is I've grown up in the industry of magic. So I feel like I have 100 dads. I feel like I've had all these people that have seen me as this brace-faced, passionate kids. And to them, as big as I get, that's who I'll always be. And I get to come home. And when I work in Sean's theater and I'm surrounded by people here, it is, that's all I am. That's all I have to be. You know, I don't have to be superhero. I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to say the right words. I don't have to calculate my conversation. I don't have to always think about what my next move is. I just get to be me with people that love what I do. And they just, I mean, they definitely keep my ego in check. Let's say that is, they do everything in their power. And I'm grateful for it, as annoying as it is at times, to just keep me as close to ground zero as I possibly can. And I need it and I'm grateful for it.
I've got a younger sister who does that for me. I've got an older brother, younger sister. I'm, well, definitely middle child, as you can probably tell. And it's that moment, it's, they show you the best of things, but they give you that level, that little kick in the kick in the gonads. Just the kind of, you know, you can't get better. You're not up to our standards just yet. And it's that encouragement, that sibling rivalry, that sibling connection that does it is amazing. What do you see in these kind of people that makes them such good performers? If you had to kind of, you know, if you looked at these people as like, what do you see between magicians and whoa kind of magicians? What do you see is unique to these kind of big, amazing stars that you interact with?
I think I'm really creatively, I'm really attractive to storytelling. So I think people that are really good at telling stories and connecting with people and just being relatable and familiar. And I think I love the kind of performer that can make you feel what you like. If you were sitting around the table with a performer and you're close and you're up there and you feel that connection, people that are capable of making you feel that in a room where you're one person in 1,000, you know, that feels like they're looking at you and speaking to you. And I think that's done through presentation and storytelling and isn't necessarily about the magic. So that for me is, and I just love seeing people be them. I love performers that go on stage and I just know this is who they are and I meet them after and that's them. And I like that because it feels like you're becoming friends with somebody when they perform. And I feel like, oh, I'm just getting to know you and this is great. And it feels like, you know, this isn't a show where I'm an audience and you're a performer and I'm watching. It's like, oh, we're all just hanging out and we're taking in this joy of life together. And you love being here as much as I love watching you be here. So I think for me, it's that people that genuinely love what they do and they love who they are in the right ways to be able to show it to you and share it with you and be a part of the journey with you.
I never thought I was going to say this, but, you know, during X-Men, I can't remember which one it is, where Jean Grey lets out her Dark Phoenix persona, you know, like the energy in it. I remember Apocalypse says something like, I can see you now. And I get that impression with you, with performers, it's you only see the real them when they perform. You know, we see the tricks in that, whereas you're seeing them as a person, their kind of persona being pushed out. Yeah. And I love that, that you get that vibe from them. And you also then have people who rip the piss at you. So you have that kind of, we'll bring you up, but we'll knock you down when you get close. Now, I heard you say somewhere you had three goals, and one of them was to be on Penn & Teller, and you achieved them by 14. How do you goal set? And now that you've destroyed all your goals at such a young age, what's next for you? How do you read up on the developments in magic? How do you kind of go, that's what I want to do? Or is that the fun? Kind of seeing all this amazing stuff happening and going, I'm doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have 1,000 goals now, but that one was, I'd written a bucket list. This is a story that I like now, and I don't think I've spoken about besides this, but I made this bucket list as a kid when I decided I wanted to do magic, and all these colored markers of all these things. And when you're a kid, it's this range of goals. It was like, have a conversation with another magician to do your first Vegas show. Like, it was just this huge scope of random things, you know, like read a book on Houdini to do Penn & Teller Fool Us. And I made this when I was 12, and everything was crossed off, you know, last year. And those were my life goals, you know, as a kid. That was everything that I wanted in my career, and I achieved that. And that, for me, was a really good marker. And it also reminds me, that was something that just always reminded me to set those little goals and be proud of the conversations and the little things that little kid you would have loved, and not just the TV show. So now when I set goals, I try and do that too and write those little things in. But what had happened with that is when I finished that list, I go, okay, I got to make a new list. And this was a couple months ago. I'm like, I got to make it as big as I possibly can. You know, what are things that I've always wanted? And I wrote on the list, the first thing was get New York Times and LA Times, because I've wanted them since I was a kid. And that just seems like a big goal, you know. And then I love the strategy, you know, what kind of shows, how do I put myself out there? How do I make the right contacts? What do I do to make that happen? And I just loved creatively starting to think about that. And I wrote it down. I made that list. I went to bed, and the next morning to go to the gym. And as I'm getting out of the car, my phone rings, and it's the New York Times. And it was 12 hours after I'd written that out and made that goal for the first time in my life. And it was just this random occurrence. Someone had said something to someone and they connected. And so I had the story, and I was a part of the story that came out in the Times a few months ago. But that was part of it, I think, for me, is just putting those things out there. And I mean, it's a half in, half out, whether I believe in the whole, you know, manifestation concept, but I do believe if you put things out there enough, they will start to come to you. You know, if you do the work and you're determined and persistent and you do it the right way, the things that you want will want you to. And that New York, that was the show in New York that I did for the Times, ended up being the hospital in and out show. So obviously it was one of those moments where it was this goal I wanted forever. And oh my God, the universe gave me this perfect moment. I wrote it down. They called me the next day. It was like, is God listening to everything I'm saying? Or there's somebody in my outlets? How do they know I wanted this and wanted it right now? And it happened. And I booked the show in New York. And I got the sickest I've probably ever been in my life. And I was in the hospital all day. And I went and did the show. And it was the worst show of my life, with the journalists from the Times and all these agencies that I had brought to see me. It was one of the worst performances I ever did. And I went back to the hospital. And then I flew out of New York the next day. It was just one of those things. And I was like, I could not have beat myself up about it, because it was out of my control. And I still did the best I could. And the article still came out, and I still made the connections. And it's just one of those things I laugh at now. I mean, I didn't find it as funny when it was happening, but now I'm just like, that's a little comical.
I love how that's your sort of reasoning. It's like, I want to go into the one of the biggest newspapers of all time. I want to be on TV. You know, it's just that kind of, where most people are like, I want to go and live in a city. I want to go, you know, you had these goals and aspirations. And it reminds me of that story of Chris Jericho, the wrestler. He'd been told that he wanted to come to the WWF at the time and, you know, be really successful. And he always thought he would build up his career and he'd win it at the biggest matches and all that. And he got told that he was going to win the title at catering because they needed somebody new to take it. Then he won the titles, came back into the locker room thinking they'd have a party for him. First ever Universal Champion, winning the two titles, like joining them together. Everybody else had gone home. And then he went back to his hotel, had a pizza, got locked out of his hotel room, and the guy wouldn't let him back in because he didn't believe who he was. So he had to tell him that there's these two big titles on his bed. He said, people always imagine you come with the money, you get the women, you get the drink, you get the roller coaster, the drugs, the whatever it is. And he said, half the time it's, now what? You know, you achieve the dreams and it's like, exactly. What do I do now? So you it's like the Aerosmith song. It's the journey, it's not the destination. No, it's the destination. No, it's the journey, not the destination. Jeez, I can't speak today. And I love that you've found that at such a young age, that it's not about experiences, it's about you actually just being part of this journey. And I love that. And I know we're way over our time, and I'm sorry, I'd love to do another one with you because I think we're just touching the surface. But what advice would you give to somebody listening to take who wants to be a creator? You know, they can go into magic, they can go into whatever it is. What would you want them to be? And like, what advice would you give them to follow their journey to being the diva, deception, or whatever it is in their life? What would you give to them to say?
Yeah. I'd say chase it and give it everything and be as determined and persistent as you possibly can. And on the other hand, say it and own it. If you want something, there is no level of success or point of your life that you get to where it's like, okay, now I can call myself this. You know, if you want to be a race car driver and you want to do that professionally, if you're chasing it, that's what you are. If people ask what you do, that's what you are. I'm a race car driver. This is what I'm doing. Well, you might not, you know, be the greatest in the world or have championships or be professional by any means. If you want something and it's for you, own it. Talk about it as much as you can. Make it your personality. You know, you need to be proud of saying who you are without the accomplishments. Like, I needed to be okay with, and it was weird, the whole I'm a magician thing, because you get all those looks when you're a kid. I needed to be proud of owning that before I got all the awards and accolades in my life. So as soon as you know what you like, or that you love, hold on to it, wrap every ounce of your being around it, do everything that you can to not let go, ignore all the background noise, own it, say as much as you can, and completely internalize your passion as who you are as a human being. Make it you, and love it, and chase it, and acknowledge it. You're going to fuck up a million times, and it doesn't make you bad at it, and it doesn't make your career ugly, and it doesn't mean it's not what you're meant to do. You're going to make so many mistakes as a human being. You know, you could become a doctor and fail at that too, or make, you know, you could fail at anything in life. So just pick the thing that you like, and even though it's going to hurt when you fail more, it's better that you're doing something that you love with your life rather than just picking something random and going, if I fail, I don't care. You should care. You've got one life. You should care.
I love how you have an insight into this world at such a young age that people would pay for. Is that what you want people to remember from this? That you have to live your passions, that don't be apologetic, just give it a go. Listen to that voice and be you.
I think so. Yeah, just jump. Just jump.
Unless you're attached to a straitjacket, that's maybe.
Yeah, then don't do that. Yeah, jump onto your feet.
I mean, I've honestly had an amazing time. I knew you're going to be a great chap, but there's so much I've learned from this, and I would love to have you back on. And I know that you're going to be a superstar. You're going to change the world. You're going to do all these amazing things. Do you have anything coming up, like stage shows? I know you can't talk about any TV work you're doing. I feel like I know you because I've researched you a lot. It's like a bit stalkerish, but you know, I'm kind of like, oh, have you got any contracts you can tell me about? Forgetting that I'm just this random serial killer looking guy you're speaking to. But have you got anything coming up that you want people to kind of go, oh, let's go and see how at this, or you know, anything coming up that you would like to promote?
Yeah, it's nothing specific, but follow my page, you know, or any things online or my websites, as I'm putting stuff out there and doing shows all the time and traveling all the time. So nothing particular and specific, but I'm touring and performing all the time, and I want to meet as many people and have as many conversations as possible. So watch me do my thing.
Love it. And how can we follow this journey? You know, what's the website, the social media handles? How can we buy tickets to come and see your shows? Because you've got all that kind of links on your social media, but you know, maybe just a good reminder for people to kind of go and follow you now.
Yeah. So my handles are the same on everything. It's the Gabriella Lester, at the Gabriella Lester, Gabriella Lester on everything. I believe my website's GabriellaLester.ca. So if you put my name into a search engine, you'll likely find me, and all the information you'll need to know on what I'm doing is there. Say hi.
Well, that's it for another week, and thank you for listening. It's now time to take what you've learned and use it to develop and enhance your life with the key points mentioned. Listen, try it, embrace it, use it, and crush it. Now's your time to hit that next level in your life. If you liked this episode, then please leave a comment on the show notes or a review of the show on your podcast platform. Everything helps evolve the show. Until next week, keep seeking the next level in your life.